Welcome in to Ruthless Aggression. I am Pierce. Rob and Chris join me, and as always, we are going to get to 2 weeks of June 2008. We're not at the draft yet, so we still got Jim Ross on Raw for another couple weeks. But let's get going with some present day. We'll talk Wyatt 6. We'll talk a Money in the Bank preview. We're still 2 weeks out. But Clash of the Castle happened last Saturday in Glasgow, Scotland. Just to quickly go through things, start with the main event. I believe Rob was the only one to say, you know, there's still some legs to the Damian Priest thing. So kudos to you for getting that right. I think the primary thing for me here is, one, excellent camera angle to not really show who's coming down the ramp and just do the overhead. That was fucking wonderful. And then maybe this is Drew's version of the chase, but I'm really enthralled by everything with Drew right now. And I'm fine with not seeing him with the belt. I'm fine with seeing him come just short so much. I think it adds so much to his character, and how very interested in what happens now. Obviously we're doing this on Friday. SmackDown is in Chicago. CM Punk will be there. Who knows if Drew shows up, but Drew quit on Monday night. So who knows? He could pop up on TNA.
I agree on both those points. I thought it was excellent camera work. I was fooled. I did not. It didn't immediately register to me that that could have been Punk in that situation, because I thought he was going to do something completely different. So they fooled me. They pulled a fast one on me. I'll freely admit that. So that was really well done. And I understand, I guess, why there's a lot of people, especially online, who want to see Drew win and keep thinking he's getting wrong, whatever. But it's at the same time, he's a bad guy. He's not doing anything that should endear you to win. I don't care that he was in his hometown and didn't win the title. By that logic, it's like, so what? If the Dallas Cowboys, I'm just going to pick them. If the Cowboys were playing a big game in Dallas, would everybody, you know, feel bad for them if they won or lost, rather, or would they mock them relentlessly?
Yeah,
I mean these things happen. People lose at their home turf. I think people saw for a really long time them book hometown heroes or whatever in a certain way that appeared, that was more than appeared adversarial at some points, because they ran the bit into the ground and were adversarial about it. But in this case, you have to just understand, like, he's not someone to root for, or not someone who should be rooting for, so I don't care that he's not winning. He's more compelling as a loser right now, because I don't know what he's going to do next. He quit. Is he going to show up on SmackDown, or is that too obvious a situation, and are they going to let it play out a little bit? Are they going to let him go do things like maybe in TNA, like you alluded to, Pierce? Are they going to do other things? Like, it's, yeah, I mean, it's great. So I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, a lot of people are upset, like you said, like, Drew didn't win the title or whatever. But, you know, the story they're telling, and I think we kind of all arrived at this conclusion, was like, you know, Drew and Punk doesn't really need the title. Like, it's a big enough story without it. And, you know, especially with the title match already going to Gunther at SummerSlam, like, it wouldn't have really made sense for Drew to win here and then lose and then, you know, go right into the Punk feud. You know, this way they can have, you know, two or three kind of big matches, and starting with SummerSlam, hopefully, and, you know, go from there.
And can I just make a quick point? Because you had just talked about, you know, whether Drew Punk needs a title or not. I think it's a fair statement for me to make here. It's maybe borders on assumption, but is based in some fact and reality. The previous regime would look at Drew Punk and say that feud needs the championship, and they would have flipped the title. There's no doubt in my mind. They would have done that. They would have cruised past Gunther even. They wouldn't have cared. They would have made Drew Punk the focus, because the old regime always went all in on everything. That was what they always did. They pushed, they quote unquote pushed their chips in with everything. They did it with the women's match at WrestleMania 35. They did it with Brock and Roman. Then, you know, they arguably, inarguably screwed Big E over on the way there. Mm-hmm. Did they really need to do that? Big E. No, they don't.
Yeah.
They definitely screwed Big E on that. And you know, it's again refreshing to see this new regime and understanding the pieces that everything falls. If you did, let's say you put the belt on that feud on McIntyre and you run that, and I was in agreement with it, you know, so I, you know, I raised my hand and they, hey, maybe I was wrong. Then what happens with Priest, and then what becomes of the Judgment Day stuff? Because honestly, the fact that you're involving both of your main champions in everything that's going on the Judgment Day, and this loose into the Judgment Day matters so much. You strip one of them and it kind of lessens the whole angle. So it's good. It's refreshing to see that they know what pieces need the props and what doesn't. They'll eventually lock up McIntyre and Punk. I'm hoping SummerSlam is probably the anticipated goal for that. I know if it was Vince, try to rush it to Money in the Bank or what have you. So the long-term vision I'm very excited about. And then, hey, you know, Priest, the title stays on Priest. Let's see what comes of it. I don't think he has currently a match. I say that.
He does.
He's not losing to Seth. I'm not fucking seeing that.
It's interesting because, like,
no chance.
Well,
no chance he loses, or no chance he wins.
No chance. Priest loses. Seth is there to put Priest over at this point. They want to give Priest that win. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, but it feels like Finn and Priest. Well, I guess they could do Priest and Gunther, but like it feels like Seth and Gunther is a bigger deal. And then if you were gonna do, you know, a Priest kind of big title match, it would be Finn instead. And he's not in the Money in the Bank match as of now. So, like, I think Seth could win. I don't know if he's gonna, but I think it could be a situation where, you know, they do kind of hot potato the belt a little bit to get it to Gunther. But, I mean, it's a long time until SummerSlam, obviously. And, you know, but they obviously were teasing Seth and Gunther, but it would be weird for Seth to come back, win, and then lose it immediately too. But I mean, it wouldn't hurt him, but like, it would be strange.
It wouldn't, but the comparison that I know you want to make, and I know that, you know, persona non grata right now, it's you're trying to make the comparison to what happened with Brock and Rock in 2002, where Rock came back, he won the title in Vengeance, and he put over the new guy on his way out. I think the issue is just, well, maybe I guess the word is an issue. I don't know if I see Gunther even winning at SummerSlam. I don't know, because I don't know how all this Judgment Day stuff is going to fall out, because there's a lot of things that still have to happen. So it's really interesting to me, because also I think that Gunther should be beating Cody for the title. So do I think he should have won King of the Ring? I don't know yet. I can't answer that question right now.
Yeah. But
I do think Gunther should beat Cody and then go on a run, and not this situation where he goes on a run with a title that, for better or worse, is lesser than the other title.
Yeah,
I mean, I wish he would have tried to make a play for Cody and then just immediately outcry, said, yeah, I'm facing the World Heavyweight Champion at SummerSlam. But, you know,
it is what it is.
I think... the other thing, and I think the finish and, you know, the aftermath is going to kind of have it lost to your history, but Drew and Priest was a really good match. It's probably Priest's best match
that I can remember.
Like, and you knew Drew would be good. You know, Priest is better, I think, than people give him credit for, but even that was like, oh, this is going to be main event. Like, pressure's on, especially after the opener, and they delivered.
For his first main event, I believe that was his first main event.
Yeah,
yeah, he definitely showed. In a singles match, one-on-one championship match, he definitely delivered. I was very impressed by his ability to step up in that moment. Obviously, Drew is not new to this. He's true to this. So being able to help him along was really big for him. And, you know, maybe it is I don't want to say defining win, but a win that leads to more opportunities.
Yeah.
for him and maybe establish himself as a main event guy, because that was a problem. You know, a lot of us couldn't see it. You know, we saw him as this transitional champion. It's going to be a couple months and then it's out. You know, granted, there's been one-time champions who have held the belt for way too long, gender, and it didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that in this avenue. So, you know, what do you think about, you know, Priest and even if he's not the primary focus on Raw, do you think that's a positive or a negative?
Rob, you can go first. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've done a better job kind of trying to make him the primary focus. Like during King of the Ring, he definitely got lost in the shuffle, but I think like they're slowly getting there. You know, obviously with him and Seth on Monday, that helped. I think that's going to make it more of a primary focus. Plus, you know, whatever this Wyatt business ends up being, but that's like the biggest story on Raw going into Money in the Bank now that Seth is back. Like, you know, how's this going to play out? And, so, yeah, I think they'll really kind of elevate the focus. And I think definitely leading up to SummerSlam, they're going to elevate the focus on Priest as well. Because, you know, like I said, they've been really telling the Judgment Day story, but it is kind of more time to focus on him singularly as champion.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the one thing that Raw has done that I've noticed, they've done a good job of main character people. They did that with Bianca when Triple H first took over.
Mm-hmm.
They did that with Rhea last year. Right now, they're doing it with Liv. They've been really strong at this, especially with the women. And I think that, you know, obviously it takes a lot for the lead roles to be the lead roles, and they're really all stepping up. For Priest, yeah, I mean, shifting this to that, I thought it was really well done how they did the segment, because Seth basically was like, he didn't ask for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Priest basically was like, oh, you know, I did that out of respect to not cash in on you or whatever, because he wanted to, but he wants to prove that he can beat him now. So he issued the challenge. I thought that was a nice twist on things to basically show that, you know, the story is he's trying to now prove himself.
Yeah.
And that I think is going to play obviously into what I think will eventually be a face turn for him out of Judgment Day. Cause I think, you know, obviously I think him and Finn are going to be at the seams, and Finn will be the heel in this role. But yeah, he's going to go into full prove himself mode now. So that's going to be really interesting.
All right, one of our other main championship matches, besides Bayley beating Piper Niven, which was a good match. Mm-hmm. I very much enjoyed that match, was the Intercontinental Championship, Sami Zayn defeating Chad Gable. And I kind of expected, because like I said, Gable can't win this with the three of them by his side, and it seems like he won't. Alpha Academy is broken up. I was very excited to see Otis boss up the way he did. They'll revisit that at some point when Chad Gable, his soul returns to his body.
Yeah, he's dead at the moment.
He's dead at the moment. We'll get to that in a half second. But this has been my favorite storyline going forward, since the whole Bloodline thing kind of dissipated for a second. I've thoroughly enjoyed Gable, you know, ramming into Otis, Maxine, Tozawa, and then finally grabbing or growing a set and breaking away. That was very fun.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I think, like, from an in-ring perspective, I think their match on Raw from Montreal was better, because they did kind of rely on like the outside elements with Maxine and, you know, Otis and Tozawa here, but that, you know, that's part of the story too. And it was a really good match. I didn't know, I mean, now that it's clear, you know, what's next for Gable, at least for the interim here, like, whatever, I know some people are upset about it. Let's see how it plays out. Like you said, we'll get into it in a minute, but like, I thought it was a really good match. The story kind of that they're telling too is like, since he's a heel, is like he's a loser and he's getting kind of delusional. And, you know, he can play that off and, you know, bring in the Creeds or whatever, if that's still the plan. And, you know, maybe it'll still work. But like, I don't have a problem with him losing that match as much as other people did, especially since it's clear that they are kind of getting Bron Breakker ready for that spot as soon as possible, maybe even at SummerSlam.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
It's clear every week.
Yeah, they're very clear. What's also clear to me, and I know that this opinion is starting to be shared a little bit, this is a little outside of where he is right now, I think Sami Zayn is definitely going to be a world champion within the next year. I mean, he's putting on some of the best stuff he's ever done, which is saying a lot, because that dude has accomplished a lot over the last however many years that he's been there. And as far as, you know, the result goes, we obviously thought a few things would happen, and we didn't think that he would win the title. I didn't think he would win the title until, you know, the ditching happened with the Alpha Academy. Obviously, that whole situation played out differently than I thought it would. But I don't really have an issue with Gable doing that or Gable losing, because I think that this is another situation where maybe the more compelling story is that he loses, because it didn't have to be this way.
Yeah.
He didn't have to react how he did to losing. He also did not have to, even going back further, remember, in the Gauntlet match, he's the one who gave Sammy a fair shot at it. He didn't have to necessarily do that. He could have went for the win, and this could have all been avoided. He didn't have to react all this way, so he keeps doing this, and now he paid the price for it. It's sort of tragic in a way. And I find that really interesting, and I find that more interesting than just the straight line everyone always wants everyone to go to of win matches, win title, and vibe, I guess. Like, this is fine. I'm good with this.
Yeah.
Whatever happens next, I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Now we're about to talk about that, so let's roll into that.
Well, yeah, I mean, we should also talk about Cody and AJ real quick, too, because that was a tremendous match.
Yeah.
Also,
it was.
You know, they did a great job in the opener, you know.
That was a really good opener.
I just, there were a couple things like, you know, Cody can't quit because he passed out. Like, that clearly isn't the rule. One of their more famous endings in company history to an I Quit match ended with someone passing out, but. You know, it is what it is. Like, I don't care. The match was good enough to, you know, look past all that. And, you know, they maybe do too many handcuff spots these days. But also, like, again, who cares? It was a good match. And I know it's been kind of polarizing that Cody hit AJ with the stairs anyway. But I didn't have a problem with that either. You know, Cena did that to JBL as well. And it's important for kind of a top babyface to show that they still have an edge like that.
Yeah, it was a really good match. The ending was what it was. You either liked it or you didn't. It is what it is. I think the two main points to take away from this is everybody's gunning for Cody. So that's Solo. That is possibly Kevin Owens.
Mm-hmm.
That is definitely Randy Orton.
Oh, yeah.
And I think just going off of everything from Paul, at some point we are going to see Roman again. I don't know if that is Cleveland or Berlin or what, but Roman's going to be back at some point in the next couple of months. It's only the time's going to play out on that. The second takeaway is maybe like a day or two after they announced that AJ Styles is going to be headed over to Japan at mid-July for a Pro Wrestling Noah match with Naomichi Marufuji. That is fucking cool. And you talk about breaking open a forbidden door. This is how you do it. I mean, the Nakamura match was one thing because it was a tribute match for Keiji Muto.
Yep.
This is like, hey, we're ready. We're open to working with any and everybody, a TNA, a Noah, a Marigold. Let's get it popping. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I was gonna say
show on network.
I was gonna say that's on the same day as Io's match with Utami Marigold, so it's gonna be real fun.
That's right. They are running Io Sky and Mayu Utami. That's
it's Utami Aya Shishita, not Mayu.
Oh, sorry, my apologies.
Yeah. No, it's all good.
Got brush up on my Marigold.
That's a huge, huge dream match out there. So that's gonna be really, really good.
Yeah, you know, you ain't got to do these like full on, like, hey, let's do cross promotional events. Just send folks over, give us dream matches. It's kind of all we really want. You know, like asking for the combined shows is like a plus. That's like the cherry on top. But I know there's a lot that goes within planning it and a lot of sacrifices that both sides would need to make. Just do a fucking one off. It's so much easier. And I promise you will be able to solve a lot of issues if you just did that. Dream matches like this. Now let's go into why it's six. Credits roll, or credits were about to roll on Raw. Jey Uso had just clinched a Money in the Bank spot in Toronto, and lights went off. We opened with, well, the door opening, and then out of the door came what appears to be Abby the Witch, who is being played by Nikki Cross. We go and filter over to the back, and we see a mallet. And who's holding that mallet? I'm blanking on the fucking name of the whoever the fuck it is. It's Eric Rowan. Yeah. You know it's Eric Rowan.
Ramblin' Rabbit.
It's a fucking rabbit. You keep going, and then you run into, what do you want, baby? I miss you. You run into Dexter Lumis as Mercy the Buzzard. You keep going. Joe Gacy's Huskus the Pig, and Chad Gable's dead. I could have swore that was Braun Strowman, but maybe it wasn't. It was a big ass motherfucker. I don't understand how it couldn't have been Braun Strowman, but nobody's confirmed it.
Yeah, it was kind of tough to see who everyone was. And then, like, I know they had something yesterday where it's like Gable's the only one that was supposed to be like a main roster guy, no matter what you think you saw, which, okay, fair enough.
That was odd. It's like you got all these folks laid out on the ground. We can't tell who's who. You can't even tell, like, you know, from a backstage perspective. Like, you know, you couldn't pick out Hurricane or whoever. The yeah. only one that was visible was Gable. And then you get all the way to the back, and here pops Uncle Howdy, Bray Dallas. Everybody comes out. They hit the everything, Bray Wyatt, the fucking lantern, the run. It was a wonderful open to this Wyatt Six faction, even though it's not six yet.
If not,
eventually, hopefully, it'll be six. But now comes the big project, and what do you do next? Because all the shit they did on Monday is the easy part. What's next is the hard part.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, and like. It was good. It was well done. But as a weekly act, just the complete tonal shift from the rest of the show is going to be a lot to overcome. I'm not going to say that they can't do it. I think they can. I think there's, you know, a segment of the audience clearly that is very into that whole thing. But right or wrong, it doesn't. I don't even mean this, you know, in a derogatory way. It feels very out of place in Triple H's WWE.
I would argue differently. I think that the show on Mondays compared to the show on Fridays, I think that there actually is a really clear difference between the narratives on each show right now.
Yeah,
and
fair.
Raw has been pulling back a little bit, I think. That they've been loosening things up. Obviously the stuff with Liv, you know, that's petering down certain, you know, areas of suggestiveness or whatever. I'm not saying that it's there's a lot of, you know, things that aren't advertiser friendly or whatever. They're still keeping it like that. But I think that they're stepping on some lines. They're, you know, having some innuendo there. And
yep.
It's not the worst thing in the world as long as you have a balance. And I think that, sure, the tonal shift is changing. But, like, you know, let's say that they did, you know, flip the title to Gunther, right? So you have a land of suddenly a lot of big bads. Is that not a tonal shift in itself?
That's fair. No, I mean, you're not wrong.
It's because, like, and I have this thing now where I watch wrestling like it's a television show, and I'm like trying to pay attention to the arcs and the narratives and whatnot. But like, that's why I didn't think that Drew was going to be champion after WrestleMania, was because the narrative was going to be all of this is brand new. And, you know, we're going forward in a positive direction, but then here's Drew McIntyre. He's getting his own revenge or vindictiveness or whatever. So
no, fair.
Yeah, I think that's my counter. My other thing, the only thing that I would say that I have trepidation on is how much restraint are they going to have? Because we know now. Granted, let's not go from one extreme to the other. When they did this the first time, they showed no restraint. They went right to the extreme of he has to be in a title match right away.
Well, it was fine until then. Like, taking out the legends and stuff, I think that was really good. Even taking out Finn, like, that was fine. But, yeah, putting him in a title match, I think he debuted in, like, August, and he was in the title match.
He debuted at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
In Toronto. And then by the time we were done with Night of Champions, the very next night, if I recall correctly, the advertising for the arena for No Mercy, or Hell in a Cell rather, spoiled the news that that Bray was going to be in it because they had him on the poster.
Yeah, and a lot of people were like, "Oh, that's a bad idea," and it turns out it was a bad idea.
Exactly. So my question is, how much restraint are they going to show here?
Well,
but to that point, strength than before.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yes,
I agree with that. To that point, though, I will say to anybody who's worried about that, the counterpoint would be, do you really need to worry about the workers in the group taking titles? I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm just saying that there are pecking orders here. And really, the star of the group hasn't even shown up yet.
Yeah,
that's the person, Alexa's the person people need to, quote unquote, think about in terms of getting a title, because she's going to probably be the puppeteer here.
Yeah, I think there might get, you know, those women's belts. Maybe Alexa will be in the hunt for the, you know, women's title. You know, maybe down the line, you know, they go after the men's tag titles too. You know, they pick two. But yeah, I don't think it's not going to be, you're not going to get, you know, Uncle Howdy against Seth Rollins main eventing a pay-per-view.
No, I will not. No, the fuck you will not.
Howdy's not going to go challenge Cody tomorrow or whatever.
Yeah, and you're not going to get like Eric Rowan against Sami Zayn or whatever, which would probably be fine, but honestly.
It would be.
Yeah. Remind me, the last time we saw Alexa Bliss was Royal Rumble 2023.
Sorry. Yes. Bianca in a real bad match, and
And then after, was she in? She wasn't in the chamber, right?
No, you're thinking of when they brought her back to put her in the chamber, and then didn't do anything with her. That was the year before.
Yeah, that was really stupid. And then they had her off TV for like 3 months, and then she came back in June.
I think she'll be back by SummerSlam.
Same.
And I think it was smart to not bring her in with the rest of them.
Agree. Because if you want to, because if you want to make her a big deal, which she is, then you hold off on her, because when they reveal her, that's where all the attention is going to go and arguably should. So
yeah,
mm-hmm. The other five could absolutely use the boost right now, and you know it's. For now, it's Bo Dallas' show. It's on Cowdy's show. He's the one that was last with Bray. He is Bray's brother. You know, he deserves to kind of have his moment as the point man in this. And then the other four, you know, they all got something to prove to. Nikki Cross has been on the main roster for so long and, you know, really hasn't been able to stick. Mm-hmm. You know, in a women's division where so many women that find avenues to be on TV every week. Eric Rowan has left and now come back. And it's been a while since we've seen Eric Rowan. Obviously, we know his connections with Bray. Joe Gacy is getting his first shot. This is his first shot. He has to knock this out of the park, or else he's going to go all the way to the lower card. And then Dexter Lumis is someone that's been on the lower card that's getting a second chance. Getting an extra chance to do something and probably do something that's a little bit up its avenue. So let them shine. Please let them shine.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I want it to succeed, obviously, because, you know, I watch Raw more often than not now, and I don't want something on the show that's bad. But more importantly, like, it's something that clearly is going to mean a lot to all six of them and, you know, a segment of the fan base. I know, you know, we were all over the place on Bray throughout the whole run. But, you know, obviously now none of that really matters. Like, it's important to honor his legacy. It meant a lot to a lot of people. And, you know, hopefully it works out.
Yes. Really quickly, let's do a quick preview of Money in the Bank. 2 weeks from now, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We already kind of said, you know, we're on Priest to beat Seth Rollins. I think the other... the WWE championship that will possibly happen at in Toronto is Cody defending against Solo. And I think we are also probably in agreement that Cody is going to, you throw out a hum.
No, because my only thing is I think that that's going to be SummerSlam. And I think that they're going to do a 6-man tag at Money in the Bank.
Yeah. At the end of Cody and AJ, when Kevin and Randy came out to help Cody, it kind of felt like, maybe, I don't know, they'll do 6-man and then, because unless Roman's going to be back for SummerSlam, like I get like Solo and Cody's not a stadium match. I understand that. I do. Like, but if Roman's not working SummerSlam and he's going to come back after the main event, which would make sense if they do Solo and Cody.
I mean, you, You say Cody and Solo isn't a stadium match. It's Cody. Of course it's a stadium
match. Well,
you put anybody.
Cody wasn't the side that I was concerned about.
Well, no, I understand that, but keep in mind.
I think he'll make it work. Yeah.
I mean, keep in mind. I think that this would be better, not to make a 1-to-1 comparison or anything, but like, I think Cody Solo has a chance of being much better than Tribal Combat last year with Roman and Jey Uso.
Absolutely.
So, I think it's going to be 6-man. New Bloodline gets a win, or Bloodline Wolfpack, whatever you want to call them. And then Solo faces Cody at SummerSlam. And whatever happens there, I think Roman comes back and maybe strikes the first shot against Solo or whatever the hell happens. But yeah.
Also, we are also keeping an eye on the Money in the Bank matches. I think we got, what, 2 currently announced?
Yes. Two participants.
Jay booked his, and then
Jay and EO.
EO.
It was EO. Yeah,
and then by the time this is out, there will also be more. Andrade, Grayson Waller. Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't announced the women's match yet for tonight for SmackDown, but they I imagine there will be one.
They announced the next one for Raw.
They did. It was
Kyrie, Lyra Valkyria, and Shayna Baszler.
I can see Lyra winning that, to be honest. Yeah,
same.
Especially considering EO and Lyra currently have a little bit of a feud going. I think it was the right call to put EO in the match again. She won last year, obviously. We haven't had a 2-time winner since CM Punk, obviously. I guess Carmella, technically, but I mean, take it or leave it, I guess. But I said it the other day. I don't know who's going to win either of these matches. So, cool. Make the argument for it. And I'll probably listen to it.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Even with these new qualifiers, I know Jey Uso's on the poster, so everyone's like, oh, he's winning. And he might, but, that also seems way too obvious.
That too.
The whole thing is, oh, he's going to win and then get back with Jay, and they're going to challenge, Tama Tonga and the other fella for the tag belts because those two are going to win them. Which, I mean, yeah, whatever. I mean, it would be really stupid to cash it in on. Every time someone's like, oh, cash it in on something other than the world title, which, I mean, they did it with Otis. It's been done a few times. It's just, it kind of takes me out. Why would you do that? It could be Jay. Bron Breakker, I guess, if you want to put him in that instead of just having him win the Intercontinental title, but I think he's kind of earmarked for the Intercontinental title at this point, probably at SummerSlam. I don't think the winner is going to come from this Andrade, Grayson Waller, Kevin Owens qualifier. I don't think it's going to come from Carmelo, Randy, and Tama Tonga. So I guess I'll go with Jay. I'm not, again, super confident in it. It seems too obvious, but just based on the rest of the field that we know, and just guys that you can think of, Jay's been pushed, obviously, as a main eventer, no pun intended, for the past, 9 months or so.
Yeah, it really doesn't seem like there's a sexy pick on the men's side, does it?
No, because, Gable's not going to be in it. He got taken out of the qualifier, obviously.
What could he get back? Could he jump back in it?
He could, yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if I would want Gable as world champion before Intercontinental champion. Mm-hmm.
Roman, Bronson Reed, and Ilya Dragunov, I don't think any of them are going to win, and that's the other qualifier. So it's you're looking at these qualifiers, and Jay is kind of the only one that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And he's really got to step his game up in ring if he wants to be world champion. He's got the crowd. That's not the issue. The crowd loves Jay. They fawn all over him. But if he can't lead a championship match, I don't want to see it. It's point blank period. You got other guys on that roster who could fill that role. And I mean, if you want to have him just hold on to the briefcase for a whole fucking year, then sure, fine. But I feel like I'm worried that at a certain point it could be too much and it could just get boring with Jay. I'll go Jay for the sake of I don't know who the fuck else wins it at this point.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
I guess you're not going to throw Randy in there if Randy's going to be in this big match. Sammy to me would be the guy, but Sammy's caught up with his Intercontinental Championship mess. So they you know, that is what it is. The women's side. Oh. Who do I feel is next in line?
That's the thing.
Jade, like, would be the most popular pick.
Yes, it would. But
I could also see Bianca being the one to win it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the fallout from that whole thing is going to be interesting, too. Like, if they kind of push towards the turn tonight, or, you know, what the plan is there. Because, yeah, I think one of those two will make it in the match. You know, don't count out Rhea as well to show up maybe the night of, take someone out, show up and win it, and then challenge Liv immediately.
That's invincible.
Oh, yeah, please don't. That's a means to an end.
Yeah.
Very Vince stuff.
I agree. Don't, I mean, we've seen it before, with Brock. It, you know, that was Vince, though. Yeah, you're right.
You mentioned it was Vince. You shouldn't do that, I don't think.
I mean, she didn't lose the title. She can come back and realistically get a shot whenever she wants. I mean.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is that, especially in her case, you know, people argue all the time, oh, XYZ doesn't need XYZ to do whatever. Yeah. Certainly, Rhea wouldn't need it.
Yeah.
But what I will say, and I have said this before, Pierce, you talked about who you think is next in line. She might be in the match. I could see it. I don't think Tiffany is winning, and I say that just because they've already told you that she's going to be one of the next in line. She doesn't need to be given a briefcase to be told that.
Yeah.
They've already put her with Becky. They've put her in matches with Bayley. They're putting her with Bianca multiple times. Like, they're telling you that she's a big deal without, you know, anointing her or whatever. And if they were going to, protect that, I don't think that they would have exposed her that much. Because keep in mind, when they did this with Io last year, she was protected from the group. She had the one title match against Bianca at Backlash, but she only wrestled her like one time previously before that. They kept her in the tag with Dakota. The differences are pretty clear to me, at least. So she may win, but I think if she was going to, there's no way that the last however many months would have happened the way that they did.
Yeah, no, I see that. Tiffany, I also don't think Tiffany's been on TV enough within the last to like immediately cycle in and win that thing. And she does not need it. So it will be interesting who they decide to give it to. But yeah, that's 2 weeks from now. We'll come back and wrap that up. We'll come back and wrap that up. For now, let's go to 2008.
Yes, we're coming off of One Night Stand. Pretty good event. Randy Orton is out of commission for the rest of the year. So kind of dealing with the fallout of that. Your top five songs. Staying at number five is No Air. Down to four is Take a Bow. Debuting at number three is Time of My Life by David Cook, which must have been right after he won American Idol.
Wow. Yeah, it had to be.
Staying at two is Bleeding Love, and staying at one is Lollipop. Top five movies. Down to five is Chronicles of Narnia. Down to four is Iron Man. Debuting at three is The Strangers. Down to two is Indiana Jones, The Kingdom of Crystal Skull. Debuting at number one is Sex and the City.
I forgot that. I had that first movie. And
Yeah, I just remember that too.
All Did right. I watch it? What do you think?
We got Raw from Bakersfield.
Wow.
I love Bakersfield.
Gotta love Bakersfield.
Triple H is here. He's still champion. The Age of Orton is dead. Triple H doesn't know who he's going to face next, and he does not care. This brings out John Cena, who you may remember from his big return at the Royal Rumble that they've done nothing with in the past 5 months. He challenged Triple H, who said, if you want some, come get some. But now Jeff Hardy is also here. All three of them won their matches that night to share a One Night Stand, and they all think they have a chance at the title. Vince comes on the screen, says Cena and Hardy will wrestle in the main event, and the winner will face Triple H at Night of Champions. Sure. Kennedy was supposed to face Paul Burchill, but Paul said he had to help Katie Lee train for her match tonight, so he sent Umaga out instead. Kennedy moved when Umaga tried to splash him through the announce table and won by countout, and then Burchill came out and attacked him. Vince is here to talk about McMahon Million Dollar Mania, which is going to be very stupid. They bring out the $1 million and they give it the Money in the Bank entrance music, which that was funny at least. So you sign up on WWE.com and then Vince calls you during Raw, and if you share the password, you win money. And and says that they're trying to get more viewers, which, crazy thing to say on television. Says the WWE audience, a cross-section of Americana, and people who look down on WWE are snobs, and it should read on the marquee, no snobs allowed. No that clue what word. He's talking about right now.
He always rambling. Uses that damn word, too.
Yes, he did say Americana, which was very funny.
Yeah, because we're listening to Lapsfin in the car, and he said that, and then he said it again.
Yeah, one of his favorite words. Carlito and Santino defeat Hardcore Holly and Cody Rhodes. Roddy Piper was the guest timekeeper because he's in Cousin Sal's corner against Santino on SmackDown. Tried to distract Santino, but it backfired. Hardcore Holly was mad at Cody for not telling him that Roddy Piper is going to be out there. Hardcore Holly is the veteran, and Cody's got to tell him these things. Hardcore Holly leaves, and Ted DiBiase Jr. comes in and says Cody's got 3 weeks before Ted Jr. finds a partner and takes the titles. Interesting. Chris Jericho is defending his Intercontinental title tonight against JBL and dedicating the match to Shawn Michaels. And Jericho gets the win by disqualification because JBL hits him with a chair, but doesn't get all of it. So Jericho gets the chair, but he won't hit JBL back. Sure. Beth Phoenix and Katie Lee defeat Mickey James and Melina. Paul Burchill comes out to celebrate, and Kennedy gets his revenge and attacks him after. Lance Cade defeats Trevor Murdoch. Listen, I understand that, you know, maybe they didn't need a pay-per-view, but they were a tag team for like 2.5 years and won the titles, and their fucking big blow-off is like 3 minutes on Raw.
Yeah, I mean,
whatever. I don't think either
Part for the course of the tag team division in this era.
Well, like, that's true, too. I mean, yeah. Cody and Hardcore Holly are losing every week, which, I mean, I know they're telling a story, but they've been doing that since, you know, WrestleMania, pretty much. Where
there's two things that Vince did not give a two shits about in this era. It's women's wrestling and tag team wrestling. And it's sad because it's, you know, we look at Curly and it's two of the things we look forward to every week. Well, wild that you can't do shit with tag team wrestling in this era.
Yeah. It would be nice if the tag titles were defended current day more often than they are, but
this is fair. I wish I would see Theory and Waller more. Shit, I haven't seen fucking Truth and Miz besides like skits.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mickey James, John Cena are flirting again. It's very funny, you see. Cena and Hardy have their number one contenders match. Jeff gets a lot of offense in early on, but eventually Cena overcomes and hits the FU, and we'll get Cena and Triple H for, I think, just the second time. I think their only other one-on-one match was WrestleMania, of any stakes, at least. I mean,
that is correct. It was the only time it happened because, I mean, yeah, I mean, it was like the only time it could have, because after 06, they did the triple threat at Backlash, yeah, and then they diverted Triple H on the DX path, mm-hmm, while Cena went on to feud with Edge and had his year-long title reign. He did not encounter Triple H on that path at all.
Also, their United Champions match is really good. I'm excited to watch it.
It is. It is. It's a really, really good match.
All right. Chris, you want to take us through ECW?
Yeah, of course. ECW from Los Angeles. We have Armando Alejandro Estrada out, who goes into his office and it's being cleaned out because Teddy Long is the GM. Good for him. I thought he was going to be the GM of Raw, but here we are instead. He booked him in a match with Matt Hardy tonight. Matt Hardy, who is still wrestling. CM Punk defeated Tommy Dreamer, Chavo Guerrero, and John Morrison, and he'll have a non-title match against Kane tonight. All four of those guys have probably wrestled within the last like year or two. I don't know about Chavo, to be fair. Big Show was next in line, but I guess he's not. And yeah, so either way, Punk Kane is happening tonight. In his WWE debut, Matt Sydal lost to Shelton Benjamin.
He did.
This is another match that technically could happen today. Then we have Matt Hardy wrestling and defeating Armando Estrada, and then Colin Delaney did too. He begged Teddy not to fire him, but said he won't, but he will have to earn his contract just like Colin Delaney did. Great. Kane defeated CM Punk, and Miz and Morrison attacked him after. That was ECW. We moved on to SmackDown, also from Los Angeles, because of course it was. La Familia began the show by celebrating Edge's win and banished The Undertaker from WWE. They did the lights trick that everyone always does with The Undertaker when they know he's not there.
Got us.
They really got us. We're getting a wedding, which should be chaotic as always, on July 11th. Batista came out, challenged Edge for the title. Vicky said no, he doesn't get to just demand things, he has to earn them. La Familia will face Batista tonight and three partners of Vicky's choosing. And if Batista's team doesn't win, he can never challenge Edge again. This is a really long segment.
It was.
Finlay defeated Chuck Palumbo in a Belfast brawl. We are nearing the end of Chuck Palumbo's run in WWE.
Yeah.
In a long 7 years.
It really has. It's kind of crazy that he lasted that long, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, he's like...
Was it really continuous?
He may have left and came back because...
No, because I know he was...
He did the FBI stuff after Billy and Chuck, and then he did... Let's see. No, he got released in 2004 and came back in 2006.
That's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right. Okay.
That's fair.
Second time's a charm, baby.
My mistake. Yep. Big Show said even though he's beat up, he's ready to face Kane at Night of Champions. Mark Henry came out and started instigating, said he should wrestle for the ECW title instead. So we've got a battle of hosses. Not the worst idea in the world to try and generate some interest. The Great Khali defeated Deuce and Domino. And then we get a very fascinating announcement here for June 2008, because Vicky Guerrero announces that a new championship is coming to SmackDown, the Divas Championship. And, you know, it's arguably long overdue, considering the fact that for many years on this program, as we saw, they tried to make Tori Wilson like Trish Stratus or like their Trish, but they never had a competent women's division on the entire show.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's good that they brought the belt in. I mean, you know, folks can say what they want about the belt or the Divas era, but it was much needed on SmackDown. It really sucks when they decide to just do away with the women's championship in a few years. But for now, it's a positive.
Yes. Cousin Sal with Roddy Piper in his corner defeats Santino Marella, of course. Jimmy Kimmel, Guillermo, and Sarah Silverman were all there as well. So, hey, that's fun. Why not? La Familia is getting ready for their match, and Edge asks Chavo to be his best man in his wedding. Natalya wins the Golden Dreams match to be the first wrestler to qualify for the Divas Championship match. So, good for her. Big spot for her.
Hey, yeah, big spot.
Vladimir Kozlov defeats Jimmy Wang Yang, and then it's time for the main event. So La Familia comes out, Batista. Let's see what sort of partners Vicky picked for him. Funaki, Colin Delaney, and Nunzio. And you know what? Despite that lineup not sounding good, everyone does as best they can and helps Batista kind of stay fresh and cycle in and out, and he's able to get the win, so he can face Edge again. That was
fair enough. It was.
All right, week two. Top five songs up to number five. I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry, which I imagine will be number one soon because that was everywhere.
Song. What a fucking song that was. Katy Perry, it came out of nowhere because the first time I heard her, it was a weird video that was playing on a website that I was using. It may have been tagged. I don't fucking know. And like, I'm like, what the fuck is that playing? And it was You're So Gay, which now is a controversial song, but like that was her first like, big song, and I remember just being like, yo, this chick's kind of nice. And then I Kissed a Girl came out and bopper. She's got a new album coming out, and cover's nice. Cover's nice. I've never been a big Katy Perry kind of, you know, mid, you know, the no Grammys joke is very funny. Like at this point, she's the Susan Lucci of pop stars, but
you know. Staying at Force, Take a Bow, up to number three from 10 is Viva La Vida by Coldplay, another song that was everywhere thanks to being in an iPod commercial, I believe it was.
Yes. Not superior than what's my man, Violent Hill. Violent Hill's fucking amazing.
Oh, yeah. Bleeding Love stays at two, Lollipop stays at one, top five movies, Strangers down to five, Indiana Jones down to four, Sex and the City down to three, debuting at two is You Don't Mess with the Zohan, debuting at number one is Kung Fu Panda.
Kung Fu Panda, holy shit. That, I never thought it would stick as much as it did. The first one was a really good movie.
Yeah.
I never thought we would have like four or five Kung Fu Pandas at this
point. No, it's nuts, man. I think there's one out right now, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
I think so. You might be right. You might be right. What was the second one? You Don't Mess with Zohan?
Oh, yeah.
Adam Sandler, man. Like, Once you get past the longest yard, he really lost his fastball.
Yeah, he was doing too much. Like, which I get it. Like, he's just doing whatever and hanging out with his friends. But, like, that's what a lot of his early movies were, too. Those were still good.
Those were actually good, right. So, hey, glad he made the pivot to doing harder shit.
Yeah. But, all right. Raw from Oakland. Your dark match featured Bryan Danielson defeating Lance Cade. So that was fun. Vince is here.
Pause. Bryan Danielson, who's not in the company, won a dark match against their tag team champion?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is like when they're about to sign him, because technically, like, he shows up with Nexus, which is, well, that's 2010, right? Like,
Yeah. When does he officially sign with FCW?
I think he signs with them in 2009. I want to say it happens in 2009, sometime around the summer. If I recall correctly.
So it's coming up close, but he's still Ring of Honor contracted.
Mm-hmm.
So this says on his Wikipedia, which take it for what it's worth, it says his contract expired in 2009, which opened up Danielson to travel to other companies more freely while competing in his home promotion. And he's re-signed with WWE under his real name in August 2009. And this says he made his debut as a WWE superstar in a dark match prior to Raw, defeating Chavo Guerrero on January 4th, 2010. Isn't that the...
That's when Brett comes back in TNA, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny, okay.
But yeah, Vince is here to do McMahon Million Dollar Mania. Password tonight is WWE Universe, and after this match, he'll call someone, and if they have the password, they'll win $200,000. Sounds pretty simple. Ken Kennedy defeats Paul Burchill, so I guess that whole thing is done. Vince is back out. Time to call someone. Again, this has gone very well for them in the past, so this is going to be the exact same. He dials two numbers, and he has to restart because he got one wrong and does not know how to dial a telephone, I realized, because he is very slow at it. And then he finally gets the number in, and the guy has a ringback tone, so plays music, and Vince doesn't know what's going on, so hangs up on the guy when he picks up. And then he calls the guy again, and the guy picks up and gives the password and wins his $200,000. So we got there. It just took a long time, and we have about 8 more of these tonight.
Live television, baby.
Some of the Oakland Raiders are there. I couldn't identify them, but Jerry Lawler said Justin Fargas, Kirk Morrison, Thomas Howard, and Ricky Brown. Those are some names for you.
Justin Fargas' wife is Nikki Fargas, former LSU head coach. She was LSU head coach before the Devil, and she's currently president of the Las Vegas Aces. She's been in control of the Aces for their last back-to-back championship
runs. Oh, shit. Okay.
So, Raider, who's now in Vegas with the Vegas wife that's president of Aces. So.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Mickie James defeats Beth Phoenix. Vince is here again. This time he calls a guy, no issues, and the guy wins $75,000. So the crowd doesn't care about this because it's boring, and also they're not the ones winning money, so kind of a double-edged sword.
You would think that maybe you would throw a bone to the live crowd.
Like, yeah, I mean, I guess technically you could still win if you were in the live crowd. You just have to call your cell phone, which...
Listen, they do it at basketball games every fucking night. Pick a section, pick a row. Bam.
Yeah.
You guys get free something. If you're willing to give away $1 million to someone sitting at home, you can give some away to a fucking section.
Exactly. Triple H and John Cena cross paths backstage. They do a little talking trash and face versus face. So they got to kind of build it as they can here. Vince is back yet again. Charlie Haas is called out to help this time. Vince didn't dial enough numbers, so they kind of stand there in silence while no dial tone happens or anything. They try again. The same thing happens. And try a third time, get a busy signal, so they get a new number. And then some lady answers and gives the password. And Vince says that she can get a bonus if Charlie kisses a diva. So Maria comes out, and he does. And then Vince offers another bonus if Charlie does it again. And this time, the diva's Mae Young. That was fun. Glad we did that. I hate this shit, man. This is some of the worst stuff they've ever done.
It really is. This stuff sucks.
JBL facing John Cena. Triple H is on commentary. Again, kind of just thrown together because Vince has 12 segments tonight. Cena beats JBL. Vince comes back out and dialed the wrong number again, but then got it right. And Stephanie was the next winner. Jerry Lawler clarifies it's not Stephanie McMahon.
Because we really needed that clarification.
We did.
I haven't seen Stephanie on this program in like 3 years.
Shawn Michaels.
At least here's a positive segment on this show.
Yes, Shawn Michaels on the highlight reel yet again. And if you're wondering, yes, it is that one. Shawn's been on the highlight reel a lot because he's been a hero and mentor to Jericho over the years. He's also become a friend to Jericho. Jericho does get on him for lying about his knee injury, though, but Shawn says he really only lied to Jericho because no one else really pressed him on it, which, I mean, fair, I guess, yeah. They go back and forth, and eventually Jericho's had enough, and he spears him and calls him a liar and a worm of a human being, and then they keep brawling, and Jericho gets him up and throws him directly into the television.
What a segment.
It's very impactful. It's very good. Obviously some long-lasting ramifications for Shawn.
Yeah. You got to wonder if he would do it again. Probably not, because, you know, his eyes drifting. But I guess it's just keeping it within the realm of pro wrestling and what was going on. Like, it was what Jericho needed to flip to this next character.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no cheering the Jericho that he is about to become. There is nothing likable about the Jericho he's about to become. And that's all people wanted to see out of Chris Jericho up until that point, because that's all we knew. So to see him go to that length against one of the most beloved superstars, that was a powerful segment.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, knowing that when he came back, it would have been 2 years, like, people are going to want to cheer him for a little bit, so don't do it right away. And then, you know, 6 months or whatever, there's your chance. And yeah, it was very good.
It's a lot of shit I could say about Chris Jericho, but his wrestling psychology is, like, top five.
Yeah, before, like, a couple years ago, he was very good at kind of reading the audience and reinventing himself to kind of fit what they want to see. And then he decided, fuck it, I don't have to do that anymore. No one's going to tell me no. So now we're here. Snitsky Numaga defeat Cody and Hardcore Holly. Lawler calls Snitsky Numaga uglier than Hulk Hogan's divorce. Got him. Got him.
Jesus. Okay. All pissed at Terry, aren't you?
Ted Jr. comes out and says that in 2 weeks there'll be new tag champions. They'll be simply priceless.
I was going to say, what was the current beef between Vince and Hogan then that he had him say that?
Yeah, I mean, that's really, really that's the question.
A little uncalled for. I know the guy's an asshole. My God.
Vince calls another number, and the guy answers and gives the password and wins $200,000 and yells, holy shit, which, proper reaction, to be honest with you.
Fair, yeah.
Crime Time defeats Santino and Carlito and then help Vince call another person. Triple H against Jeff Hardy is your main event. Cena's on commentary, which is distracting Triple H quite a bit. Late in the match, both are outside, and Triple H throws Jeff Hardy over the announce table at Cena. Triple H throws Jeff back in the ring, but as he tries to get in, Cena comes over and pulls him off the apron, and Jeff wins by countout. And as they're arguing, Jeff comes and does a splash on both of them. That's how the show ends. Well, actually, Vince gives away more money, and then he'll do it again next week, and that's how the show ends.
What a thrilling way to end Monday Night Raw.
Yes. Chris, you want to take us through ECW?
Yes.
Very simple this week.
Yeah. So we are in San Jose, California. Great city. We start off with a tag team match where young guys, Kofi Kingston and Evan Bourne, defeat Shelton Benjamin and Mike Knox.
Air boom.
And yes, Head has a new assistant, Tiffany. He's willing to give Armando another chance, get a contract if he can beat Finley tonight. We have a Divas match between Kelly Kelly and Victoria. Kelly beats Victoria, the veteran. We have young beating old tonight so far. But not in this case, because Finlay beats Armando Estrada. And then Colin Delaney beats Armando Estrada. And so does Hornswoggle. Mark Henry congratulated The Big Show on becoming the number one contender to the ECW title and wants to face the winner of him and Kane sometime after Night of Champions. Once again, you could do a lot worse than some hosses fighting for a title. I get it. It's fine.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
It's not the worst idea. And then we have in our main event, Miz and Morrison defeat the ragtag team of Kane and CM Punk to retain the tag team titles. Right guys won.
Yeah, I would agree.
And then we move on to SmackDown, also from San Jose, of course. Vicky was in the ring for a contract signing between Edge and Batista. Edge signed, Vicky signed. Batista had to beat Kali before he could technically qualify, but he signed anyway without reading it. So if he doesn't beat Kali, he's going to be banished from WWE. That's why you need to read the fine print, Dave.
True.
Come on, man. John Morrison beat Finley, both of whom were working double duty for some reason. They have a big enough roster to avoid these sorts of things. Edge wanted to honor Batista's career tonight since he's going to be banished. So, and then CM Punk told Edge to be careful because he could cash in on him whenever, even at his wedding.
Ooh.
This is tremendous foreshadowing.
It is.
And absolutely. I forgot about that. That is tremendous foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. Mark Henry defeats Tommy Dreamer, which, I mean, obviously. Kind of surprised Dreamer's still there.
Yeah, seriously.
Edge and Vicky are meeting with the wedding planner, who is Alicia Fox. Keep that in mind for a couple weeks here. MVP wants to renegotiate his contract. Vicky tells him to defeat CM Punk, and then they'll talk. Cherry defeats Maryse. CM Punk defeats MVP, so that didn't really work out for him. Matt Hardy defeats Chuck Palumbo. Jesse and Festus defeat Deuce and Domino, another team who are probably on their way out. And in your main event, Batista defeats Great Khali, so he will face Edge at Night of Champions. Not the best couple weeks for television here.
No, it's very mid. It's really mid. We're done, right?
We are. We have the draft in a couple weeks, and then, yeah, we'll have Night of Champions, and yeah.
We'll hopefully get to better wrestling in 2 weeks. And I mean, present day, we hope we get a banger of a Forbidden Door. That's happening in Chicago in a couple weekend, I think next Sunday.
Yep.
And then, 2 weeks from now, Money in the Bank, we'll be back to recap it live from Toronto. I got to get ready to go to Orlando. Fuck off for a few weeks. So you guys enjoy your wrestling. I know, baby. You can follow me on Twitter at Cameron Sansa, Rob's at RobinO31, Chris is at Chris M. Novak, at BarbershareNet on X and Instagram, Facebook.com/BarbershareDigital. I got a whining cat that needs to be fed, so I'm going to go. You guys have a wonderful rest of your June. We'll see you back after Money in the Bank here on Ruthless Aggression.